This is Lorne Green. The first months of the Civil War were for the northern side a time of confusion. The Battle of Bull Run had destroyed the Union's feeling of optimism that had found its best expression in that jaunty phrase, "On to Richmond." Suddenly, the lesson was clear. This would be a long and bloody war. But the northern people were not psychologically prepared for such sacrifice. Romanticism was still in the air. Heroes were still being sought. An easy solution was still hoped for. After Bull Run, President Lincoln called for an additional 400,000 volunteers to supplant the original 75,000 men that had been defeated by Beauregard's forces. These new volunteers would have to be supplied with uniforms, ammunition, foodstuffs, and medicine. This would be a difficult task for the most efficient of war machines, but for the Northern Army in 1861, it was well nigh impossible. One of the chief problems was the appointment to positions of responsibility of the so-called political generals. Howard Hubbard, the hero of our story, is not a political general. He's a political colonel, a lieutenant colonel, to be exact. Howard is also a United States congressman from Ohio, and he is fully aware of the newly passed law that requires congressmen who are generals to resign their office. By accepting the lower rank, Howard can be in uniform and still take his seat in the House. It is, all in all, a perfect arrangement. And it's made even more perfect since Howard is assigned to the Quartermaster Corps, safely ensconced in Washington, far from the whine of enemy bullets and close to the political and social lights of the Capitol. Yes, Howard Hubbard would appear to be a very lucky man in that summer of 1861. His only worries revolve around bedrolls, haversacks, hardtack, and other dry details of supply. The rebels are across the Potomac. The parties that summer are splendid. Howard has made two speeches on the evils of the South to ringing applause from his House colleagues. He's 31 years old, and his future is enormous. And that's only the beginning of our story.
Mutual Radio Theater, a new adventure in radio listening. 5 nights of exceptional entertainment every week. Brought to you in Elliot Lewis's production of the Mutual Radio Theater. Our story, After Bull Run, by Kevin Sellers. Our stars, Jack Bannon and Vic Perrin.
In 1861, Lieutenant Colonel Howard Hubbard has something to be thankful for. Namely, Captain Edmund Fitzpatrick, his subordinate officer, a regular army lifer who knows the intricacies of procurement and ordnance. Howard is in the habit of leaving the actual running of his department in Captain Fitzpatrick's hands while he attends to the more absorbing matters of politics and society. Captain Fitzpatrick and a staff aide thus find themselves on this hot summer afternoon cooped up in the War Department reviewing supply records.
Can I close the window, Captain?
Aren't you hot, Sergeant?
Oh, I'm burning up, sir. But hearing the birds and the people outside only makes it worse.
Try losing yourself in your work.
I'd rather be fighting Johnny Reb, sir.
And would you rather starve? These records show each soldier with an average ration of 2 pieces coarse bread, 1/2 pound salt beef, and 1/4 canteen of water per day.
And they say Johnny Reb goes without eating some days.
Yes, and that's why they'll lose the war, eventually.
I think we'll be in Richmond this time next year.
Perhaps, as prisoners of war.
Oh, McClellan will get us there, sir. I love that little man. He's given the Army new hope.
He's certainly given it a new name, the Army of the Potomac. Rather interesting, naming an army after a river.
May I ask you a personal question, sir?
Seeing as how we're both shut up in this mausoleum together, you may, Sergeant.
Are you a Democrat, sir?
If you wish to know for whom I voted last November, the answer is Lincoln.
Oh, I knew you weren't no awful Democrat, sir.
I think it's time we went to work.
Yes, sir.
Fitzpatrick, diligent as always.
Colonel Hubbard, Mrs. Hubbard.
I thought we agreed on Howard.
With all due respect, Colonel, I prefer the formal address.
It is precisely because you have no respect for my husband, Captain, that you won't use his Christian name.
Adele, please. Fitzpatrick is regular army. I understand that.
Thank you, Colonel.
I thought I'd come around and see how the wheels were churning. Adele and I were in the neighborhood, garden party at the McClellans.
And did the general shake your hand?
Yes, of course. Why, shouldn't he have?
Indeed. It's just that in every photograph, the general has his right hand inside his coat. One wonders if it's in emulation of Napoleon or a severe case of dyspepsia.
I fail to see the humor, Captain.
Really, Mrs. Hubbard? I thought it was quite broad.
I do see, however, why you're still a captain at age 40.
Adele, that's uncalled for.
And it's imprudent of you to laugh at such jokes, Howard. I'll wait for you in the carriage.
Good day, Mrs. Hubbard.
I won't be long. My wife has become very close with Mrs. McClellan.
She's right, though. It's jokes like that that have kept me from advancement. I started making them at the point to keep from going crazy, and I've never learned to stop. Besides, it's just as well your wife left when she did. Sergeant?
Sir?
Wait in the anteroom till we're finished. Hmm?
Very good, sir.
I've been going over these requisition papers, Colonel, and I notice certain discrepancy between...
Can't this wait until next week? I have a speech coming up.
Obviously, if this did not directly concern you, Colonel, it would already have been taken care of.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
As you know, Colonel, I double-check each regiment's requisition papers against prior reports. I find that in the case of the 5th Ohio Volunteer Regiment...
That's Clem Ward's outfit.
Yes, and last month, General Ward requested 1,500 pounds of salt beef. The month before that, he requested and received 2,500 pounds of salt beef. And this month, he asks us for an additional 2,800 pounds of salt beef. Now, that's a lot of meat.
Well, let's figure it out. The average ration of salt beef per soldier is roughly a pound.
Half a pound, Colonel.
Of course, half a pound. That adds up to...
Double the regiment.
What's your point, Fitzpatrick? I hardly think Clem Ward's hoarding beef.
Nor do I, Colonel. I do know, however, that the commanding officer tends to sign whatever his quartermaster officer puts before him. And it's perfectly plausible that the quartermaster officer and the local sutler are in league.
You mean...
I mean the sutler gets paid twice the amount he should, then divvies up his profits with the quartermaster officer. It's an old army game.
Well, what do you recommend we do?
Seeing as how General Ward's family is close to your wife's family, perhaps you could speak to him informally and alert him to what's going on.
Very good. Arrange an appointment, then. Let's say week after next. I'll need at least that much time to prepare for my speech. It's a scientific refutation of slavery using the very latest...
Colonel, if I may make a suggestion...
I know. You don't want me to tell Adele.
No. You can tell your wife whatever you like. I was going to suggest that you go to see General Ward rather than vice versa.
But why?
Well, it might arouse suspicion if General Ward is suddenly summoned to the Capitol to see the chief quartermaster officer. If you were to show up at his headquarters, we could disguise the visit as an inspection tour.
But Clem's regiment is halfway to Harper's Ferry in very desolate country.
I don't think the enemy is within 50 miles of the 5th Ohio, Colonel.
That's an unfair remark. I wasn't thinking about the enemy.
And what were you thinking about, Colonel Hubbard?
I'm your superior officer. I don't have to take this from you.
I'll put in a request for transfer, Colonel.
No. No, the heat has us all upset. When do you recommend we visit General Ward?
As soon as possible.
Very well. We'll leave tomorrow. Carry on.
Colonel.
You can return to your work, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Well, there's a man I feel sorry for, sir.
Why is that, Sergeant?
Well, his wife's a regular she-devil, for one.
Oh, I don't know. She gives him sound political advice. She's loyal to him. She comes from good Ohio landowning stock, same as he. No, Sergeant, I don't feel sorry for Colonel Hubbard. He's very lucky. It's all come easy for him. He's never been tested. And it's to be hoped he never will be, for he'd surely fail.
the summer of 1861, the Potomac River was the border between the Union and Confederate forces. On the Virginia side nestled the troops of Beauregard and Joe Johnston, while along the Maryland side of the river lay the Army of the Potomac under George McClellan. The 5th Ohio Volunteers, Clement Ward commanding, was encamped roughly halfway between the capital and Harper's Ferry. Sentries were posted along the river, of course, but the enemy was reported to be a full day's march to the northeast, and the sentries mostly amused themselves playing pinochle and three-card monte.
We use this part of the river as a community bathing area. You won't find any lousy men in my regiment, Howard.
It's very bucolic, Clem. Reminds me of the Muskingum back home.
Oh, my foreman writes me glowing letters of the corn yield.
As does mine. If half of it's true, we'll be rich men.
Excuse me for interrupting, gentlemen, but isn't that a sentry over there on that outcropping?
Yes, Captain Fitzpatrick. We post a full guard as if the enemy were directly across the river.
And I take it the enemy is using observation balloons?
Not to my knowledge. Why do you think that, Captain?
From the position of that sentry, stretched out flat on his back with his face to the sky above.
What? Excuse me, gentlemen. Sergeant, there's a sentry asleep on his post. Have him properly disciplined.
I suppose such conduct is excusable with the enemy so far away.
I can assure you, gentlemen, that was the exception and not the rule.
Obviously, if it were the rule, General, you would not be alive to greet us.
That's a little morbid, Fitzpatrick.
I've taken the liberty of serving lunch. I trust it will meet with everyone's satisfaction.
I'm admiring your tent, General. Hardly army issue.
That's right, Captain. I had it specially made at my own expense. It helps to absorb the heat.
Clem! You remembered.
Yes, Howard. Plum tarts, your favorite. With freshly picked plums.
They're delicious. Try one, Fitzpatrick.
Thank you, no. I will try some of this claret, if I may.
Are you gentlemen in the mood for an off-color story?
Let her fly, Clem.
All righty. We all know General Lee's horse is called Traveler, and every time Lee mounts the beast...
I think it's fair to warn you, General, that I've heard this story, and if you persist in the telling of it, I must leave your tent.
Oh, come on, Fitzpatrick. We're grown men here.
Then I suggest we act like grown men.
I was under the impression Lee was the enemy.
General Lee is a gentleman, and I won't hear him traduced.
Lee taught him at the point, Clem.
Oh, I see, I see.
If it's all the same, I'd like to get to the matter at hand.
That's fine with me, Howard.
I suppose the sooner we take care of this unpleasantness, the sooner we can all relax and enjoy ourselves.
General, your commissary officer is a Major Bagby, William Bagby.
That's right. West Point fellow, like you.
Hardly like me, General. Would you have him sent here, please, so we can question him?
Well, surely, Captain. I'll be right back. Now make yourselves at home.
You're the prickliest fellow sometimes, Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, I guess I'm not used to this kind of war.
You will handle this, Bagby, won't you? I find it difficult to be harsh with anyone.
I'll do the questioning. You will stay in the tent.
You have no respect for me whatever, do you?
I think you're a brilliant politician, Colonel.
Soon this war will be over, Fitzpatrick, and you'll need us politicians. Because military men cannot legislate. They cannot preside over the nation's day-to-day affairs. They cannot wrestle with the tariff.
You're making a speech, Colonel.
That's right. And you'll let me finish because... What's that?
I believe they call it the rebel yell.
You said the enemy was nowhere near.
It appears I was wrong.
Well, what's going to happen?
We must hope that General Ward will turn out to be a better soldier than he is a storyteller.
Shouldn't we see what's going on?
We can hear what's going on. We're being attacked.
Ah, Clem, what's the situation?
Oh, it's a small raiding party. We're repulsing them.
First raiding party I know of to use mortars.
A company, then. Certainly no more than that.
You, of course, have sent out reconnaissance patrols to determine the exact strength of the enemy?
Yes, that was my very next order. Now, if you gentlemen...
Oh, my God, Clem.
Don't touch him. He's gone, Colonel.
No, he's not. He's still...
Don't handle him, you fool.
Oh, my God.
You've spilled his brains over the floor.
I'm going to be sick.
Yes, a good idea. I'll be right back, Colonel.
This is absurd. I shouldn't be here. I should be at the War Department or at my desk in the house. Damn faulty intelligence reports, enemy 50 miles away. How are we expected to win a war with intelligence like that? Oh, God. Pull yourself together now. It won't do to have Fitzpatrick. You're crying like a baby. I'll be damned if I'll wait here and get to blown to bits in this tent. I'll commandeer a horse and ride to Washington. After all, this isn't my command. I'm a visitor here. Now hold on, Hubbard. Think this through. Would it be wise of me to leave the scene of a battle? I just hear the Democrats when they get hold of that one. Hubbard ran. That'd fix me. End of my career right then and there. And the corpses don't become senators now, do they? No, they don't. And besides, I'll say I was writing for help, for reinforcements. That's plausible, isn't it? Where are the horses? I can't see anything in all this smoke.
I thought I told you to stay in your tent, Colonel.
Oh, Fitzpatrick, where'd you find that horse?
Never mind. Mount up.
Gladly. I take it you know the way to Washington.
Nope, but I know the way to that farmhouse up there on the ridge.
Then you'll stop and ask directions?
I mean, that's your headquarters, Colonel.
What?
Well, you're the ranking officer. General Ward, Colonel Edwards, and Major Bagby are dead.
But I'm not a combat soldier.
To say the least. That's why your orders shall be filtered through me.
But, Fitzpatrick, that's patently dishonest.
You surprise me sometimes, Colonel. Yes, it is patently dishonest. But it'd be a lot worse for both you and the Army to own up to the truth. Well, I'm not too concerned with your embarrassment, Colonel. I happen to care very much about the Army.
Are you sure it'll work?
No, but with your luck, it probably will. I'll bet I end up making you a hero. This farmhouse looks sturdy enough to withstand some shelling.
Colonel Hubbard, Major Henderson at your service.
I'm Captain Fitzpatrick. The gentleman to my rear is your commander.
Oh, yes, Major. What is the state of things?
Well, we've fallen back in good order, sir. Estimated casualties, 30 killed, 45 wounded, including General Ward and Colonel Edwards among the casualties, sir.
I see. Have the men deployed along the ridge and organize a reconnaissance party.
Very good, sir.
You remembered about the reconnaissance party. Very good, Colonel.
Was my order to deploy the men along the ridge sensible?
Eminently, seeing as how they're already here. Why don't you wait here in the parlor while I look around for a private room for us?
It's a lovely parlor. Reminds me of the farms back home. Music box. Comforter. Calico curtains. I feel safe here somehow. I hope Fitzpatrick can make this work. Fitzpatrick! That was close by. Oh, there you are. You look white.
How observant of you, Colonel.
You're bleeding.
Yes, I am. As you can see, I've been shot.
Don't move. Don't move. I'll get an orderly. Major Henderson! Major Henderson!
Yes, sir?
Captain Fitzpatrick's been shot.
I'll dispatch a stretcher, sir.
Hold on, Fitzpatrick. We're getting help.
Damn rebel snipers. Best marksman in the world.
If it's not too painful for you, I need to ask your advice. What order should I give now?
You should make a diversion. Yes. And then you should...
Yes, a diversion. Fitzpatrick, are you conscious? Oh, my God, he's fainted dead away. I'm in for it now.
During the Civil War, there were many small skirmishes. In the overall context of the struggle, they were unimportant, merely a way for the dormant military muscle to flex itself. 50 men would die, 75 would be taken prisoner, a hill or a stream was temporarily captured. Soon the engagement was forgotten, obliterated by a Gettysburg, a Chickamauga, a Bull Run. Even the soldiers who participated in these skirmishes tended to lump them together in one long 5-year panorama of blood, mud, and boredom. For Howard Hubbard, though, this particular skirmish would not be forgotten. It was, as Captain Fitzpatrick implied, his first test.
I think he's dead, Major.
No, he's not. Be careful, boys, how you carry him.
Will he regain consciousness soon?
I hope not, for his sake. It's 2 miles to the field hospital, and the roads are rutted out. I've prepared a map of our position, sir.
Thank you, Major. I need time to study it. Where can I go to be alone?
With all due respect, sir, the situation calls for an immediate decision regarding the route of retreat.
I said I need time to think.
I believe there's a sitting room beyond the parlor, sir. I'll post a guard.
Thank you, Major. I'm sorry to be so abrupt. I simply need time to acquaint myself with the terrain.
Yes, sir.
Did you say the sitting room was beyond the parlor?
Yes, sir.
I'll only be a moment, Major.
Yes, sir.
That Major has contempt for me. Doesn't he understand the plain fact that I'm not a combat officer? Why did Fitzpatrick have to go and get himself wounded? It's as if someone were deliberately trying to humiliate me. First Clem gets killed, and Clem's chief officer, and now Fitzpatrick's wounded. I've never had such a run of rotten luck. Yes?
Sir, the scouting party has determined the enemy's position and approximate strength.
Yes?
It would be easier, sir, if I didn't have to shout through a closed door.
Of course, of course. Forgive my rudeness.
It's the 2nd Mississippi, Colonel. General Evans' regiment. We appear to outnumber them by roughly 500 men. They broke through on our south flank, and they're presently in control of the river crossing and the main Washington Pike.
Yes, I see.
Well, what are your orders, sir?
I still need time to study the map.
Colonel, for God's sake, the retreat route will soon...
You shall close the door, Major, and leave me.
Sir!
I dislike shouting at the fellow, but he's too insistent. All right, let's study this map now. It looks simple enough. And there's the Potomac. Enemies in control there. There's the ridge. What's this? Murdoch's Hill? Oh, that must be that rise of land to our immediate east. Seems to me, if artillery can be placed there... Yes. Major Henderson?
Sir!
Take some artillery and move on Murdoch's Hill.
That's not possible, Colonel.
Why not? We have artillery, don't we?
The enemy has already taken Murdoch's Hill, sir.
Why wasn't I told that?
I thought it was obvious, sir.
Well, Major, if the enemy has taken Murdoch's Hill, then I see no alternative but to retreat.
Exactly, sir. Only now it may be too late.
Well, don't stand there then, Major. Sound the retreat.
Wouldn't the colonel like to know the path of retreat?
I see it, Major. It's this bridge over Taylor's Run. I'm not a complete blockhead, you know.
I'll have the men move out, Colonel.
I guess retreat's preferable to surrender. No one can expect me to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. I'm not McClellan or Buell. All in all, considering the extraordinary circumstances, I've acquitted myself admirably. I don't see what else I could have done. Fitzpatrick will sure be surprised. I'm sure he will have expected me to fail utterly. Perhaps I'll even earn a measure of his bloody respect. Are we ready, Major?
Captain Claiborne is here, sir.
Yes, Captain.
I'm sorry to report, sir. The enemy has taken the bridge spanning Taylor's Run.
I thought you said this was our escape route, Major.
I'm afraid delay has cost us the advantage, sir.
Are you implying that I'm at fault?
Simply noting a fact, sir.
You're being insubordinate, Major.
Sir!
And don't retreat behind your regular army facade.
At least I can retreat, Colonel.
You'll retract that remark.
Colonel, I think we can take that bridge.
Patrick, that's insanity.
I think it's very interesting. Please continue, Captain.
An all-out assault on the bridge can succeed. The enemy is tired. They've marched at double time in the heat to beat us to the bridge.
I completely disagree, Patrick.
And what's your alternative, Major?
That we send for reinforcements.
Now, the nearest troops are at Leesburg. That's a 15-mile march. We'd never hold out. The artillery's got a range.
I cannot condone a frontal assault on a well-guarded bridge.
Let me understand this. If we fail to procure reinforcements and stay here, then we'll be compelled to surrender?
Right, Colonel.
The other course is, with all due respect to Patrick, suicidal.
It can work, Colonel.
I agree, Captain. Order the assault.
Yes, sir.
You're dismissed, Major.
This is outrageous. You're playing politics with men's lives.
Major, I'm warning you.
You gave that order because you wish to avoid the embarrassment of a surrender caused by your own ignorance.
One more word, and I'll have you put under armed guard.
Sir!
How dare you impute such motives to me?
Sir!
I must make the decisions. Isn't that the way of it?
Sir!
Well, answer me.
I was ordered to say nothing more, sir. Not one more word. Is the colonel now rescinding his order?
Get out of my sight.
Sir!
I'm counting on you, Claiborne. Please be right and end this string of bad luck.
Lorne Greene again, and here's the fourth act of After Bull Run. The assault on the bridge was successful, at a cost of some 200 killed and 300 wounded. But the enemy's losses were only slightly less, and as the newspapers pointed out, even a costly retreat was preferable to an out-and-out surrender in these discouraging days after Bull Run. For Howard Hubbard, the engagement was a personal triumph. He was the guest of honor at a presidential reception, was given a rousing ovation when he went to his desk in the House, and McClellan offered Hubbard a promotion to Brigadier General, which he graciously declined. Everyone knew why, of course. A general would have to resign his House seat, and no one ever accused Howard Hubbard of faulty political instincts. Certainly no one believed Hubbard's stated reason, which was that he was not fit to be a general.
It's such a lovely afternoon, Howard. Must we visit a stuffy army hospital?
You needn't. I've told you that.
You would like me to come with you, though.
It's up to you, Adele.
I really don't care for Captain Fitzpatrick.
I know.
And he doesn't care for us. Which is why I find it so curious that you go out of your way to see him.
He's my chief aide.
That's not why you visit him. For some unfathomable reason, you seem to admire the man.
He has many good qualities.
Such as? Jealousy? Arrogance?
Fitzpatrick is arrogant, but I don't think he's jealous.
He's crawling with envy toward you. Why else would he refuse to congratulate you on your victory?
It wasn't a victory, Adele. It was a retreat.
It was a brilliant tactical move. Everyone else saw fit to praise you, including the Democrats. Why not your sainted subordinate?
Because he saw it for what it was. A desperate gamble by a confused, inept political officer.
Please don't shout. You sound like a barnyard turkey.
200 men were killed assaulting that bridge, and I might as well have executed them myself.
Is this what Fitzpatrick's been telling you? You know you could have him court-martialed.
He hasn't told me a thing. Surprising as it may seem to you, my dear, I possess some semblance of a conscience.
You don't need to be sarcastic toward me.
I apologize.
Would you rather have surrendered?
Yes. Now that I reflect on it, yes, I would. At least those 200 men would be alive.
If you call being shut up in Libby prison being alive, subject to torture, starvation, rats gnawing...
Please, Adele, I've already given that speech.
I don't understand this sudden shift in your attitude.
It's quite simple. I find it loathsome to be treated as a hero when in reality I'm just a bumbling fool. A dangerous bumbling fool.
So you were telling the truth?
Pardon me?
About the promotion. You really feel you're unfit?
Yes. But it failed to serve its purpose. It didn't wipe out those dead men. Perhaps nothing will.
Howard, you did the best that anyone could expect.
Don't you see? I had no business commanding. While I was trying to read a basic military map, the enemy outflanked me. If I'd had the least qualifications for my job, the brilliant retreat would not have been attempted and we wouldn't have lost anyone. That's the thing in a nutshell, my dear.
Then why didn't the newspapers report that?
Oh, don't be naive. They're desperate for good news now. They'll grasp at the flimsiest of straws. They certainly won't question the wisdom of a course of action that works, no matter how costly or unnecessary it was.
It's not like you to be so cynical.
I'm not cynical. I'm very patriotic. I believe in making large personal sacrifices for one's country.
The successful leader must not be afflicted with self-doubt.
I agree.
If you give in to self-doubt and introspection and gloom, your constituents will reject you.
You're absolutely right.
Oh, my. Why do they place the hospital so near the river? Isn't that uncomfortable for the patients?
Yes, but river swampland is much cheaper. I'll only be an hour with Fitzpatrick. Why don't you drive through Rock Creek and we'll meet at 4 o'clock?
Would you like some fresh peaches?
Oh, that sounds delicious.
Well, I'll do some shopping then. Howard.
Yes?
You have a large destiny. Don't lose sight of it.
I can't imagine that happening. Goodbye for now.
Colonel.
I see you're sitting up, Fitzpatrick. That's good.
Yes, I can see the unfinished Capitol dome without the help of pillows. I do appreciate the symbolism of an incomplete country. But when are you politicians going to vote enough money to finish the damn thing?
In time, I hope, for Lincoln's next inaugural.
Yes. And speaking of wild rumors, I heard one of the effect that you refused a generalship.
Yes.
You said you weren't fit?
That's correct.
Did anyone believe you besides me?
My wife.
That's good. That's good. A man should be honest with his wife.
Yes. In all things.
You sound troubled, Colonel.
No, not at all. I just find it odd that a bachelor like yourself would make such sweeping pronouncements upon marriage.
I wasn't always a bachelor, Colonel.
I see. I'm sorry, Fitzpatrick. When did it happen?
Our first post out of the point, Dakota Territory, Sioux raiding party. We were led by the territorial governor's nephew. He, too, harbored political ambitions, but he didn't have your luck. He perished along with Sylvia.
It's no wonder you feel contempt for me.
Actually, Colonel, taking the past into account, I'm amazed that I like you as much as I do. What in the devil's that?
I'll take a look. Why, it's General McClellan.
Better button up my hospital gown.
I think I'll mosey along.
Don't be foolish. We haven't had a proper visit.
I really must go. I told Adele that...
Attention!
At ease, Captain FitzHubbard!
General, I believe you know Colonel Hubbard.
Ah, Hubbard, didn't see you. Biggest fool in the army.
General, please, we agree.
You
that...
know what this fool went and did.
He refused your promotion.
Oh, that wasn't foolish at all. That's good politics. No, this fool actually resigned
General,
his
please.
Colonel's commission. And if that isn't enough, he insists on being kicked down to buck private. We're now addressing Private Howard Hubbard. I suppose I should order him about, have him black my boots, but I just can't. Well, I trust you're on the mend, Captain.
Thank you, sir. Yes, I am.
Where are you from, FitzHubbard?
New York City, sir.
Not a bad place, though I prefer Boston. Higher level of culture, you know. Well, carry on.
Thank you, sir.
Up to, Private.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, at that rate, he should tour the hospital in a little under an hour.
He's a whirlwind of a man.
He should always be on horseback, though.
Another of your jokes?
Not at all. He's quite short and plump, but his posture's perfect. Mounted, he's imposing. Standing, he's pompous.
You're telling me these kinds of things because of my new rank?
Perhaps. Who else knows?
No one. Yourself and the general, that's all.
No wonder you looked pained when I made my observation about honesty toward wives.
It won't be easy to tell her.
You'd better hurry. I have a hunch General McClellan will betray your confidence.
I was going to tell her this afternoon, but I couldn't work up the courage.
What outfit are you joining?
The 5th Ohio, of course.
You ever fired a rifle?
Not since I was 17.
You are an interesting man. I completely underrated you.
Coming from one's superior officer, that's quite a compliment.
Actually, Private, for the first time in our relationship, it's you who outranked me.
The following is a letter written by Private Howard Hubbard to Captain Edmund Fitzpatrick. The date is August 31, 1862.
Dear Fitzpatrick, writing paper and ink being in short supply, as I'm sure you are undoubtedly aware, I shall make this letter brief and to the point. They are calling this the Second Battle of Bull Run, and I'm afraid we have fared no better than at the first. General Pope's blunders make mine the acts of a military genius. Everyone is clamoring for the return of McClellan. I would wait for a happier occasion to communicate with you, except for two occurrences that have happened on this date. The first is the anniversary of my decision to renounce my command. To say that I have not regretted my decision would be false. Perhaps my former letters have conveyed some measure of the discomfort, fear, and loneliness it has been my lot to endure this past year. But as a large penance was required of me, the sheer magnitude of my miseries as a foot soldier have eased my burden somewhat. My conscience is not entirely at peace. How can it ever be? But I begin to feel a small sense of expiation and release. The second occurrence is a happier one. I am no longer Private Howard Hubbard. You are now pleased to know Private First Class Howard Hubbard. This promotion is entirely routine. In a time of war, they tell me one gets sent up a rank each year as a matter of course. Be that as it may, let me end this letter by saying that no advancement has pleased me more and no achievement has made me as proud as this promotion. Compared to it, my election to Congress and my appointment as Lieutenant Colonel are but pebbles. I think only you, my good friend, will understand this and not think me crazy. I must go now. It is my turn to stand watch. Yours respectfully, Howard Hubbard, Private First Class, U.S. Army.
Mutual Radio Theater is brought to you 5 nights a week at this time. Tonight's original radio play, After Bull Run, was written by Kevin Sellers and produced and directed by Fletcher Markle. Your host was Lorne Green. Our stars were Jack Bannon and Vic Perrin. Featured in the cast were Marvin Miller, Joan McCall, Barney Phillips, and Jack Manning. John Harlan speaking. The Elliott Lewis production of Mutual Radio Theater is a presentation of CBI.
Mutual Radio Theater has been brought to you in part by Sears, a name that means quality and value, a name that you can count on for service and dependability. Sears, where America shops for value.
This is Andy Griffith. It's time for laughter on tomorrow's show, and we challenge you to keep a straight face while you're listening.